Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey there, Mark. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, man.
I had a lovely... We both took nights off last night, and I went to the Pegu Club, and I had brilliant cocktails and excellent service. Then I went to Hearth Restaurant in Manhattan, where Paul Greco, who's going to come on the show, is the owner, and Haley Rose is his... she's the sommelier, I believe, there. They were both there, and we wandered in, got a table, had a wonderful meal, and then ended up the evening with an old-fashioned at a great little bar called Angel's Share, which makes... classic, perfect cocktails. I had great service all night. People were really nice to me. It was just terrific.
Sounds awesome.
How was your night?
I went to a cheesy New Jersey Italian restaurant and hated every minute of it.
That was a setup, everybody.
My wife and I got a sitter, and so we needed to stay close to home because the baby is still, well, a baby.
And all.
So we wanted to be fairly close to home. And we succeeded in the close to home part. That was really good.
Yeah.
You know something? There's just some things about certain restaurants. And we see this in the entire country. We don't just see this in New Jersey. But just certain things in restaurants that I don't understand why they're acceptable. I don't understand why... we go to restaurants like this and why people accept these things. And I guess, truthfully, it's why we get as many compliments as we do in our restaurants, because a lot of restaurants out there just, I'll tell you the crux of my feeling, and then I'll go over the individual experiences. But the heart of what happened is I felt like no one cared if I had a good time or not.
Yeah.
In the restaurant.
You know, people will forgive a lot if they feel like you're really trying and you're paying attention to them and that they matter to you. Because sometimes we do make mistakes. And I think that sometimes when we make mistakes, and I know as a patron, when I'm out, if I feel like there's somebody really trying and they just something screwed up, you know, they overcooked the steak and you had to cook it again, so mm-hmm. I got to wait longer. If I feel like that bothers you, that you mm-hmm. care about me, I'll cut you some more slack. As opposed to you pissing me off.
Or that it's an anomaly. Instead of just what happens every day from day to day.
Tell us what happened.
I had a 9 p.m. reservation, which in Jersey is a fairly late reservation for a lot of restaurants.
Right. In Madrid, it's kind of early, but in New Jersey,
exactly.
It's fairly late.
Well, they put us into the bar and said, "Oh, your table's not ready yet." That's fine. You know, I own a restaurant. I understand things are busy. It was a Friday night. The night I went out, I didn't actually go out last night, and. So we end up getting sat at 9:55, where we ordered appetizers at the bar.
So your reservation's at 9, you show up at 9, 9:55 they seat you.
9:55 I get sat, and you know me, I'm looking at the time, I'm checking things
you
out.
You have a baby at home.
I want to know what the norms are too. I'm also observing the restaurant mm-hmm. while I'm there. Nobody says anything except your table's ready. A hostess comes over and says your table's ready. And I think 55 minutes, that's a really long time to wait for a table. Generally, just from our point of view, 15 minutes, you know, to turn over a table, that's a normal amount of time. Anything really past 15 minutes that you're waiting for your table.
We try to have your table when you get there. But
of course.
Up to 15 minutes, I think, is, you know.
Is reasonable. Okay? If you're 15 minutes late, that's reasonable. If I'm 15 minutes late, that's reasonable. After 15 minutes, there should be somebody saying,
"Oh my God,
you know, I'm sorry, this isn't ready."
Which isn't say that that's not going to, in any restaurant, it's going to happen
course.
A couple of times a year.
Of
that
course.
You're going to just mess up.
And again, I'm going to, everything that I'm talking about as far as the things that happened with this restaurant, all would have been solved by, you know, I'm sorry that happened. All would have been solved by somebody just caring.
Giving a crap.
So
what happens after you sit?
So, you know, the feel is that there's just nobody really in charge of this place, and that was obviously another problem. But I got sat in an aisle seat. I'm a fairly big guy, as you obviously know.
I noticed.
But I get sat in the aisle, and I'm kind of in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but
they sat you there.
But there's not a lot I can do about that.
Right.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you, and this is an actual truth, I didn't get kicked less than 30 or 40 times by the waiters as they walked past me. Okay, and again.
Did you kick back?
No apology, no I'm sorry, no excuse me, nothing. They just kicked my chair and went on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? If you kicked it once and you didn't notice that you were kicking my chair because you were in a hurry, I'd say okay. But you just kicked my chair 20, 30, maybe 40 times. My chair during a meal where I'm got a fork heading for my mouth, and all of a sudden I'm jarred, I'm shaken. And again, I thought, okay, you can't really fit through this space because of how big I am and where you've put me.
But you didn't design the space.
But I didn't design the space, and I'm the customer. You've kicked me.
Right. Right.
You need to say, I'm sorry, even if you don't mean it. You got to say it.
See, now, when I kick you, I'm intentionally doing it. So I don't think that I'm obligated to apologize. Because I wind up, you know, and I go for the kick. So what else happened?
Well, it's just a lot of the and now I'm going to talk about some things that are more typical of the Jersey Italian-style restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they give a litany of specials that are not written down anywhere, so you got to memorize what
they have.
What was
the deal again?
Exactly.
What was the third special again?
And again, no prices. And you just know that those specials are $10 more than anything else on the menu.
I'm not into that.
All right. And I'm going to tell you that this restaurant, the food was pretty good.
Yeah, you're not going back, are you?
Okay, I'll never go back. There were so many different little things like that. You know, okay, so I got something that was supposed to have truffles in it, and it had that fake truffle oil in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was inexpensive, so I knew that I was going to get that.
Right.
You know, you offer me a $16 gnocchi that says truffles, I know because I know I'm not getting truffles.
That's a nanogram.
I also noticed that the oil was kind of that fake oil, not the real truffle oil, because you can taste it especially if you taste a lot of truffle oil.
Hey man, $14, you ain't getting truffles.
$14, you're never getting truffles.
Well, I think that again, you raise a great point, and whether it's and we've consulted for a number of different places, and we looked at buying a couple of different places over the years, and what is a common denominator, whether it's the sports bar, the high end cocktail bar, the dive dump on the corner. Look, there was a guy named Bob. I'll say his last name because he was almost a celebrity in New Brunswick for a long time. Bob McGee was a bartender at the Ale and Witch Pub for many, many years. I went into that bar for, you know, it's kind of a dive bar, and that's no shot on them, to throw some darts and have a Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
But I went there because Bob always, I felt that Bob, it was really important to Bob. And
Bob was happy to see you.
Happy to see me.
And there you go. You've touched on it.
Yeah.
Nobody at this restaurant that I went to was happy to see me. I felt like they would have been happier if I had never come.
Well, and look, they're going to get their wish. You know what I mean? See? maybe that was what they wanted all along.
You know, I left out one more tiny little thing.
Go ahead, keep fetching.
Okay.
It's good, it's fun.
I'm sorry. And I'm not giving the name of the restaurant because I don't want to.
Unless you email him.
If you ask me personally, I'll let it all out.
Go ahead.
But
it rhymes with.
But I paid for a bottle of wine and my appetizers are at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever it was, $80, $90, $100, whatever I spent on two little appetizers and my bottle of wine. When my check came, everything was on the check, including the bottle of wine and the appetizers.
But you'd already paid for it?
That I'd already paid for. Again, no apology, no nothing. Come on! You just put $100 on my check, tried to charge me twice.
Wow.
And you didn't say I'm sorry.
That's right.
And you didn't say I'm sorry, and that was the problem.
Well,
you didn't care.
Well, I'm sorry you all had to listen to this litany out there in restaurant.
We care.
We'll be back in just a moment talking about happier things with Kate Crater from Food & Wine Magazine. We'll be talking about cocktails in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Kate Crater. Kate's been on before, and she returns to talk about cocktails, among other things, with us. She is a senior editor at Food & Wine Magazine, overseeing news, trend, and restaurant coverage. She's also the editor of the Food & Wine Cocktail section and has contributed to many of Food & Wine's other books. I have in my hand a Food and Wine Cocktails 2006. Over 150 of the best drinks and snacks from the hottest bars, plus the Essential American Nightlife Guide. This is one heck of a book here, Kate.
Isn't it excellent?
It's awesome. You're responsible for this?
I'd like to say I'm completely responsible for it, and I will tell you that I've tasted every single cocktail in this book, but we have I have a whole fantastic team that works with me.
It's all about the team.
Did you taste them all in one afternoon?
Can you imagine? No, we spread it out over a little bit, but there are some days where we tasted like 20 cocktails when it was very hard to go back to your desk and try and edit.
You know, it's funny. We do wine tastings a lot, and we recently put together a cocktail program for the new restaurant that we opened.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you get it all down, you do the research, you put it the list, and then it's go time, you know, and you need to make them. And we spent a few days where we did 20 or 30 cocktails in the afternoon, and you try and sip and spit, but
right.
It ain't like wine, man.
Right.
It's hard.
Tincture needs a little more, you know, a little more cinnamon, you know, those kinds of things. You have to taste them. You have
and
to taste them
to
in the cocktails.
Again.
And then you have to sip again. And the really good ones you want to finish.
Right,
exactly.
And then you go back to your desk and sleep. Now, the Cocktails 2006, this guide, is this, how long has this guide been coming out?
Actually, last year was our first year. My boss, editor-in-chief, David Cowan, had a great idea that we should do cocktails. And so not only is it a fantastic kind of cookbook of cocktail recipes with all these excellent cocktails that you want to drink all year long, but the back is a kind of guide to the best nightlife, where we picked up these cocktail recipes from, because we actually gathered the recipes from great bars, restaurants, and lounges across the country. So not only do you get these great recipes, but you know where to go, like if you're in Portland, Oregon, or if you're in Washington, D.C., where you want to go and drink.
I'll tell you, Kate, and I'll be very frank. Mm-hmm. I generally don't like when the magazines do these kind of compilation books of the end of the year, you know, bring all the chefs together. Uh-huh. I generally don't enjoy those very well, but this is a great book with some real cocktails in here. Most, you know, in going through and checking out the ingredients of these cocktails, generally when you have a compilation book, somebody slides in who's kind of got a woo-woo or, you know, something like that going on in the book, and I don't see any of those cocktails in this book, and I thought that was pretty impressive.
Thank you for saying that. You know what? It's not like they're not out there. They definitely are out there, but we don't want people to necessarily, we don't want to tell people to make those at home.
Right. I don't think I saw a blue drink in the whole book.
There might be one blue drink. There's actually a really fun drink that has those Swedish candy fish in it that I kind of love that drink. I can't remember what the name of it is. But, I mean, there's a few things that I would call clever that some people might call gimmicky.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's a drink called Finding Nemo from Sidebar in San Diego, and it is unfortunately lightly blue.
Oh, you've blued up your book.
I blewed up my book, sorry, but I just put one.
Okay,
one
fair enough.
Now, how did you go about collecting these great cocktails? And they're from all across the country, and you credit the bars where they come from. I mean, did you solicit submissions, or did you ask your local writers? How did you come up with them?
We did. That's such a good question. We actually did both. We when we travel, we just make a point of going to as many bars as possible.
I do the same. I do the same thing. I'm not writing a book though. I just like them.
We have to get your recommendations. Maybe next year we can even put New Brunswick, New Jersey in here.
I'm all in.
Big time.
I'm all in.
But we also have stringers across the country who recommend, because we want the places that we recommend aren't necessarily new, because you know those new bars don't always last.
Mm-hmm.
But we want them to be great or cool or have something to recommend them. So some of them are new, some of them have been fantastic destinations for a long time now, and some of them, you know, they all represent something good for us.
Did you encounter any situations where there was a bar that wanted to put a certain cocktail in as their submission, and you were like, no, can't do that with the apple pucker, can't do it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, Goldschlager. There's definitely, no matter how good the bar is, you know, no matter what, people are still serving a lot of Cosmopolitans, and so you have to winnow out the recipes that you want, but bartenders, everybody, the bar managers have all been fantastically helpful for us.
But you're an editor. This shouldn't be a big deal.
No, you can make it work.
And is this going to be an annual thing going forward, Food and Wine?
Yeah, I think so. We're really, I mean, even though we think this is really the year of the cocktail, I think it's the kind of thing, it gives us this great opportunity to find out what's going on and what people are drinking, because cocktails are, in fact, a little bit a mirror of the way people are cooking now. Like, we found a lot of really great cocktails have herbs in them. People are doing like gin and tonics with tarragon And we're seeing like herbs and desserts too. I think in some ways, like, you can't draw a whole bunch of parallels, but there's definitely a correlation between how much fun and what kind of sophisticated drinks people are making and what they're doing with their food and other, you know, in other areas.
And you say it's the year of the cocktail. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, we just feel like, at Food and Wine, we feel like, this year, 2006, is a time when cocktails have really come into their own, where a lot of restaurants have set up very serious bar programs, and they've installed kind of destination bartenders, like people who make their own tonic water. It's not even like squeezing fresh juice anymore. That's so 2005.
Right. You've got to make your own tincture of clove, or you're not really cool.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So we feel like we're just seeing so many people doing that, and doing it not to be gimmicky, but really because people's, you know, drinking habits have just gotten sophisticated.
Actually, when we come back, I want to talk more about bars and bartenders making their own ingredients and stuff that you can make at home. It's probably easier for a bartender to do it. But we'll be talking more with that in just a moment. Kate Crater is a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine, and she's largely responsible for Food & Wine Cocktails 2006, which is a great guide to cocktails. You can learn more about it by going to our website at restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurant. We're talking with Kate Crater of Food & Wine magazine about their cocktail guide, Food & Wine Cocktails 2006, which you can find out more about by going to our website at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Now, Kate, we were talking before the break about destination bartenders making their own ingredients. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's not just gimmicky. We came out with, we wanted to use grenadine in a couple of old drinks because I like resurrecting old drinks in Catherine Lombardi, our place.
Oh, great.
And, you know, grenadine was originally made from pomegranate.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the current stuff is just red sweet stuff filled with corn syrup.
It's like buying the pre-made Mr. T sour mix, pretty much. It really is. Use it as an ingredient.
And so what we did, and what I found out that Nicholas Harari did, independent of us, who owns a restaurant called Restaurant Nicholas here in Jersey as well, we've made our own grenadine that really tastes like something.
Mm-hmm.
And
great.
You have to make it because it doesn't exist.
And it's not just red and sweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but you're seeing a lot more of that out there?
Yeah, we're seeing, I don't know if this is a long-lasting trend, quite frankly, because I don't know if it's, like, time-wise or money-wise worth everybody's effort to do it, especially because I think mixers are, like, what you can get commercially, there's a lot of bad grenadine, but people are starting to make a lot more bitters. Like, mm-hmm. you can see much more kind of custom-made and very tasty bitters
yep.
on the market now.
Yep.
But definitely there's a whole trend right now in bar chefs. Like, they're called bar chefs. They're not even called bartenders. They're mm-hmm. called bar chefs. And they make, like, they've been making tonic water. They've been getting quinine and making tonic water.
Sure.
They've been totally, like, following you guys and making grenadine and things like that. And it makes a huge, fantastic difference in the drink.
Well, right now we're carrying about 20 different bitters, and each
really?
One has a different
wow.
flavor profile.
Uh-huh.
And each one should be used for a different purpose. And mm-hmm. I think it's an ingredient just like the whiskey's different than the scotch is different
exactly.
than the gin.
Uh-huh.
And that the different gins are different, the different bitters are different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember when I first started bartending, they taught me that a Manhattan, which is a very basic drink, was made with rye and sweet vermouth. there was no mention of bitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
really?
And if there was one bottle of bitters behind the bar, it had been open since the bar opened 20 right. years before. And it was actually solid on the inside of the bottle.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, to see what, you know, because it was the old Angostura was what you'd have. And then maybe Angostura and Peychaud's, which are the two bitters. But bitters are really integral to making a cocktail. Hey, listen, we'll come back after the news and talk more with Kate Crater from Food & Wine about cocktails and the new cocktail guide from Food & Wine, Cocktails 2006. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Kate Crater. She's a senior editor at Food & Wine magazine, and she oversees their reporting on news, trends, and restaurant coverage. She's also the editor of the Food & Wine cocktail section, and she has taken the lead in this new book, which is Food & Wine Cocktails 2006. It's a guide of over 150 of the best drinks and snacks, all from the hottest bars, plus an essential guide to American nightlife. Now, we talked earlier about this being, you mentioned that it was sort of the year of the cocktail, and this is indeed, by many accounts, the 2006 is the 200th anniversary of the American cocktail, and even the Museum of the American Cocktail is putting on a bit of a celebration to celebrate that sort of thing. Are you involved in any of that stuff?
No, I wish we are. I wish we were. We're going to attend some of those events for sure, but I didn't realize it was the 200th anniversary. That's excellent.
Well, it's sort of the 200th anniversary. Now, no one knows when the cocktail was invented to begin with,
right?
But it seems as though the first mention had always been considered. 2006 was the first time.
1806.
I'm sorry, 1806 was the first time.
I'm here for you.
A cocktail had been mentioned in print.
Uh-huh.
The Museum of the American Cocktail is launching this Bi-City celebration, which we're going to go to and cover. We'll be there with our microphones.
Great. Good work.
We're going to do the New York one. And that's this coming month. But what happened at the end of last year was a new reference came about from 1803. That was just discovered.
Uh-oh. Whoops, so it's the 203rd anniversary
exactly.
of the cocktail.
But the invitations were already printed, so we're going with it. You know what I mean? Now, you've seen cocktails. You say cocktails are sort of rising to the level of food with bartenders calling themselves bar chefs.
Mm-hmm.
Are you now, that was the first guy that I knew that did that was a guy named Albert Trummer at a place
uh-huh.
called Town in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
And he had printed on his card, bar chef,
uh-huh.
instead of bartender. And he really was, because he had all this stuff that he made himself. And he really constructed his cocktails very carefully as any appetizer. Are people really using that term across the country?
People are. There's another popular term is mixologist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mixologist I can get, but when somebody calls themselves a bar chef, unless it's Albert, I'm like, come on, you're a bar chef.
Show me your ingredients. You got to show
exactly.
me your ingredients. That's what it's all about.
No, I don't know. I have a problem with the term of art bar chef.
Oh, see, I don't.
Albert
see,
can use it. Nobody else can.
You know why I don't have a problem with it? Because a bartender is a totally different thing. And I'll never forget my very first bartending job. A guy was training me how to bartend. And he said, okay, here's what you got to know. Okay, Dewars and water, Dewars and tonic. Here's how you make your drinks. And if somebody orders a drink called an old fashioned, you just tell them you don't have any bitters and you can't make it.
And are you serious?
I swear,
that's awesome.
How I was trained. You know, it was the middle 80s and people just didn't care that much.
Yeah. And I
it was a sad time for cocktails.
And they especially didn't care that much in the dump you were working in back then. I remember the place.
I think it's true. Bar chef definitely has like a pretentious ring to it, and not everybody, you know, you can be very skeptical of people. But actually, I think that somebody like Stefan Trummer can say it, and his brother, or Albert Trummer can say it. And then his brother, Stefan, is also
right.
an excellent bar chef as well. He's at a place called 202 in kind of the meatpacking district.
Mm-hmm.
And he does this great thing, like he challenges people. They can bring in an ingredient and he'll make a drink for it. Like you could bring in your candy canes at Christmas.
Wow.
And he might think about it for a day or two and then he'll construct a drink, a really tasty drink or a very thoughtful drink to go with it. And I think that's wonderful. Like I think that is kind of a bar chef.
I'm going down there with cod liver oil and we'll see what he has.
really?
We'll see what he's made of. Uh-oh. We'll test his stuff.
Gone.
Now let's turn the conversation because I think this book is really relevant too. Now, I think that it's wonderful that the art of the bartender is returning.
Mm-hmm.
But what this book speaks to is people are making cocktails more at home.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see the state of the cocktail party and the cocktail at home?
We've seen, well, you know what, in the past year or two, I would say, like, even though we think 2006 is the year of the cocktail, having, like, cocktail parties at home really got big even, like, a year ago, I think, and it's got to do, I think, with the way people eat at home a lot now. They have, like, these kind of small plates parties. They don't necessarily have full-on sit-down three-course dinner parties.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of fun when people don't necessarily sit down, when they can, like, mingle, and cocktails go so well with that. Plus, you know, in the way that everybody, especially guys, love grills, and they love to get all the, you know, every single grill, the Spaeth Art grill and accessories, I think there's a lot of fun that you can have with cocktails and their accessories. So I think people, like, outfit their, like, cool bar areas with everything, and then you have to have a cocktail party to celebrate.
Well, and to show off.
You know that mingling is a key ingredient to every great cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But yeah,
exactly.
And I, you know, it's funny because, and I think cocktail parties are a great idea to have at home or to have in a restaurant because, mm-hmm. you know, even at political fundraisers, what tends to happen? I mean, sometimes we go to you know, some sort of fundraiser where, you know, it's $500 a plate.
Wow.
Very often, Mark and I will go, and you go for the cocktail hour, mm-hmm. and a lot of people do this because a lot of these happen in hotels around New Brunswick. We'll do a lot of dinners after dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a $500 plate rubber chicken dinner at the something hotel, you know, a quarter mile away. And people will go for the cocktail hour, because during the cocktail hour, you can see 50 people, 60 people. Once you're seated at that table of 10 that your company bought, why do you need to be there and sit at that table of 10? So we do a lot of business in the restaurant. People coming after the cocktail hour somewhere, they bag out before they sit down.
Skip the dinner.
Uh-huh.
And sit down. And I think that really speaks to the utility of a cocktail party or a cocktail hour.
Excellent point.
Well, now, I think that one of the things that I've seen, one of the disturbing trends that I've seen that I don't support, mm-hmm. is the growth of the size of the martini glass.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some beautiful illustrations here in your book of different sizes of glasses that all look sort of appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
There is sort of a big is more aesthetic that's been going on with martini. And I, you know, the martini, when, you know, Dale DeGroff would make them at the Rainbow Room in the 80s, and they were very true to the history of them, it'd be 3 ounces of liquor.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
whereas now you go in some place and they have these 9-ounce martini glasses, and I think, oh my God, who's going to drink 7 ounces? I mean, if you have two of them, that's a half a bottle of gin.
Right.
Those are the people you're staying away from.
Yeah. So what about glassware in bars and restaurants and at home?
You guys actually address this in the book as well.
We have an In-N-Out list, and we think that those big, unwieldy martini glasses, as well as some of the margarita glasses, are out. Like, we think some things are in, and we think those super big ones. And anyway, like, everything sloshes all over the place in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ridiculous. So I completely 100% agree with you. Not everywhere. I mean, I think somewhere in some places in the country they're still going strong, mm-hmm. you know, but...
Jersey.
Sorry.
They're going strong in Jersey. We're a little bit behind.
New Brunswick, right? You guys have made it safer.
There you go.
We are
making the streets safe for cocktailers everywhere as quickly as we can.
We use smaller glasses, but mm-hmm. I mean, you know, why do you want 7 ounces of bourbon in your...
Well, because it's going to be warm and...
Yeah, it doesn't stay cold.
That's the one thing that I love that you said as far as a what's out thing,
mm-hmm.
are those little individual... shakers,
yeah.
where your drink gets watered down and mm-hmm. watered down and watered down and watered down, and you get a you know, half water cocktail by the end.
Okay, everybody,
exactly.
Listen up. You make a cocktail, you put the right amount of ice in it, you shake it until it's done, and then it's done. Pour the drink out and throw the shaker away. Well, I think that's interesting. Well, those big glasses, though, I still have them at home, and I like them at home.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea, it's sort of like when you go to a restaurant and the chef has a big plate to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I like martinis or Manhattans at home, Manhattans in the winter, martinis in the summer. Mm-hmm. But I have those huge glasses, but I put 3.5 ounces
mm-hmm.
of liquor in them. That's the whole idea, is it's
uh-huh.
supposed to be, you know. But, yeah, so you're against big glasses as well?
Way against them, yeah. I think because unfortunately, like, you're smart and you can exercise restraint, but definitely I think if you go to a bar and you get a big martini glass, it's only half filled. People are going to be like, what's up? You know, they,
mm-hmm.
so, and it, you're exactly right. The drink gets warm, it gets watered down. If there's any little bit of ice in it, it's silly.
And I'm against the guy who drinks the 9-ounce martini.
Because I've had to call him a cab. I'm against it, too. Is there a favorite cocktail that you have or a school of cocktails that you have that you think really works at a home cocktail party?
That is an excellent question. I think I always want to think punches are making a comeback,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure if they really have. I think I'm in a minority, but I think
it's wishful thinking on your part.
Well, at a party, they're great because a punch is made, mm-hmm. and then everybody just kind of keeps going back to it.
Can go and help. Yeah, I think they're just fun. But I'm personally a big sidecar girl. I love Grandy sidecars. I'm not sure if they lend themselves so well to parties. I think people still have a lot of fun with mojito-like drinks because mm-hmm. it's really easy to find, like mint, you know, and squeeze some lemon juice. And then you can have, like, a really refreshing cocktail that's kind of transportive, you know, that makes you feel like you're somewhere else or might remind you of a great vacation. So.
We're gonna transport to the other side of this commercial break in just a moment, where we're going to talk more with Kate Crater, senior editor at Food & Wine, about their new guide, Cocktails 2006 by Food & Wine, which you can learn more about at our website. We'll be talking with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest is Kate Crater. She is a senior editor of Food & Wine magazine and largely responsible for the beautiful guide they have out, Cocktails 2006, which you can learn more about at our website and pick it up. It's really a great cocktail book to have hanging out at home right next to Anthony Giglio's edited Mr. Boston Guide. Those are our first picks for cocktail reference works. Do you like the Mr. Boston Guide? Have you heard about that? That was such a terrible – Mr. Boston was so irrelevant for so long,
uh-huh.
and Anthony Giglio, our evidently mutual friend, edited it,
uh-huh. mm-hmm.
and now it's the current
– It's a book again. It's a real bartender's guide mm-hmm. again.
But don't – if there's a 2-year-old copy out on the shelves, you don't want that one because mm-hmm. that's a bad one. Make sure that we got the one edited by Anthony Giglio. So the nice thing about these cocktail books is they're not necessarily designed for bartenders. Good bartender is always reading. They're designed for people to have at home. And we were talking about cocktail parties at home.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think makes – what are the elements of a good cocktail party at home?
That is another excellent question.
We're full of them. we're full of something. I'm not sure.
You guys are on. I think to have a good cocktail party, it helps to have like a themed drink, you know, just to pick a drink and have it be your specialty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have, I would say you shouldn't go crazy and have like 5 different kinds of spirits or boozes. But I think if you have 2 or 3, so if someone really doesn't drink gin, like even if your specialty is going to be some kind of fantastic, you know, gimlet or whatever, you can have options for people, but mm-hmm. I would not offer more than 3 drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it's good to have a little series of mixers. But not, you know, then it gets really boring too. On the other hand, you know, how many dumb bad parties have you been to where there's just a lineup of tonic and orange juice and cranberry juice? So I think it's really fun to have one.
I'm going
to
say all of them.
All of them, yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm remembering? I'm remembering my parents' cocktail parties, and they would be all that stuff would be on the dryer in the utility room.
I went to that party.
Yeah, and I'd serve my aunt's highballs. You know, get Aunt Lila highball. Okay.
You really have an Aunt Lila.
I do. She's great, by the way. Well, the other thing when you talk about parties at home, you'd alluded to earlier, making a punch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what makes a great punch? I mean, seal test sherbet went in my family's punches right there with the
really?
Canada Dry ginger ale.
Uh-huh.
But I do love punches. What makes a great punch work?
You don't want it to be too fruity. I don't want to say anything about the sherbet, your family's sherbet punch, but that might not necessarily be the best one to have, especially now. Like you can do.
What if you used a better sherbet? I'm just kidding.
Use a better sherbet. Yeah, exactly. Haagen-Dazs sorbet really helps.
Yeah, yeah.
Upgrade.
It'd be better than the seal test.
Upgrade. you, I mean, I think actually you can do fun things with that. We did have a really fun drink. We did have a very fun drink that that had sherbet in it either this year or last year. But you can do, like, little things. Like, you can make ice cubes. We have a really cool cucumber cooler. That's not a punch, but you can easily use, like, cucumber, like, ice cubes that you make either with fruit juice or something in them. So when they melt, the drink, the punch doesn't just
the drinks don't get diluted, sure.
So so you can do fun things like that, but I think a key to a good punch is to kind of keep it simple and not put in, like, 10 different kinds of juices so it ends up tasting like Hawaiian punch or, like, some weird fruit nectar that you had somewhere.
You know, and there are some old classic punches that you can pick up. Actually, there's, mm-hmm. I mean, Cocktails 2006 is a great book to have. There are some old punches in the Mr. Boston Guide. Mm-hmm. And in Dale DeGroff's book, mm-hmm. The Craft of the Cocktail, mm-hmm. he has a great little punch section there, and I've made a few of those punches. Mm-hmm. But as you talk about, Kate, the ice is supremely important. And mm-hmm. when you make a punch, you take one block of ice in the center mm-hmm. of that punch. Even if, you know, even if it's a water ice, mm-hmm. it's got to be one piece of ice. It can't be ice cubes.
That's an excellent point.
Because, I mean, and it's sort of festive to see that big iceberg mm-hmm. floating around in there.
And also, it'll melt slower and keep your drink and keep your punch cooler at the same time.
You guys are good. That's actually the most important thing we've said on the whole show is really, like, ice. Ice is one of the most important things in the cocktail, besides, like, the quality of spirits that you use. And if you have a big block of ice sitting in the middle of your punch bowl, it's going to keep it cool. It's not going to melt out so quickly.
It's
brilliant suggestion.
One of the things we talk about on this show a lot is ice, and is just that. If you want to make a great cocktail, mm-hmm. you have to have great ice cubes. And actually, we bought a special ice machine just to make cocktails with.
Really?
You know, that makes the 1-inch by 1-inch cubes, but. In the home is one of the few places you have an advantage over a lot of restaurants mm-hmm. is because you have the ice cube trays. You use those 1-inch by 1-inch cubes, mm-hmm. which actually make much better cocktails than your typical half moon mm-hmm. restaurant
yeah.
Ice machine mm-hmm. ice that you get in, you know, a hotel or a restaurant. Using those 1-inch by 1-inch cubes to make cocktails can make all the difference in the world.
And you need to be careful if you go out and buy ice. If you're buying hollow ice cubes, as sometimes mm-hmm. you can buy. Now, sometimes you can buy those cubes, but if you go out and you buy hollow ice cubes, they're going to dilute your drinks. They're going to change the flavor profile of your drinks. If you shake the drinks at all enough to mix them, they're going to dilute out. And you're better off if the only ice cubes you can find to buy are the hollow ones, mm-hmm. is to just make ice in your own refrigerator. You
know, those cubes simply melt too fast and add too much water, and that's really what the problem is.
Exactly.
You know what? The three of us are a bunch of dorks talking about this, aren't we? Holy moly.
I thought we were really smart.
Yeah, but you believe me, you want to have one of the three of us put in your cocktail party together.
Well, you can't call us a dork. We're talking about the thermodynamics of ice here. You know, this is important stuff.
Well, you know, it is important stuff. It's not like somebody dies if we don't get the cocktail party right, but we really do take our jobs very seriously. Our guest today is Kate Crater. She is the senior editor at Food & Wine magazine, and we're not talking about food or wine. We're talking about cocktails and the great new cocktail guide they have out, which you can find out more about by checking our website. We're going to be back in just a moment talking with Kate some more. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, y'all, welcome back. This is Francis and Mark from Stage Left and Captain LaGuardia Restaurant. Our guest is Kate Crater. She has just put together the Food & Wine Magazine Guide for Cocktails in New York. It's actually a book that you can pick up and you should have, both if you want to make cocktails at home and if you want to know where to go in the country to get great cocktails. Kate, you're based in New York, right?
Exactly.
So what are your recommendations for the top places to go and get cocktails in New York City?
Oh, my goodness. Well, luckily, because we were just talking about it, I'm going to tell you that I really love the Flatiron.
Mm-hmm. Flatiron Lounge,
sure. Flatiron Lounge, which is in, I guess, the Gramercy Park area.
Sure, in the Flatiron Building, yep.
I love what Audrey Saunders cocktails at the Pegu Club.
Mm-hmm. One of our favorites.
Yay.
Place we talk about a lot.
It's so good. It's so smart. They have... when you sit down at tables, when you order a drink, they bring you these little droppers of different flavorings so you can adjust your drink slightly. If you want it a little tangier, they have fresh lemon juice. If you want it a little sweeter, they have simple syrup. I love that. I think
it's like the salt and pepper of
exactly.
Of,
and the place we talked about bar chefs earlier. The places that we're talking about right now, that's what these guys are. These guys are bar chefs.
Exactly.
And you were going to say?
I like employees only, too, although it gets a little crazy. I think that they have some really fun, inspired drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a nice little menu, too, though. I enjoy the employees only menu.
I'll tell you.
You guys know it all. You guys are experts.
You know why I really like employees only?
Huh.
We have in our restaurant, we have commission.
Because you like to drink cocktails.
Yes. We have that end. We have commissioned some reproductions of Tamara de Limpica, who was a painter who painted in the 20s.
Uh-huh.
And she did a lot of great work. And Tamara de Limpica is featured throughout the restaurant.
Oh, really?
The prints from her. Yeah, they're lovely.
Uh-huh.
But Tamara de Limpica painted a lot of, like, one-breast-bared portraits and a lot of nudes that are awesome, but I just have too much corporate business. I can't risk it.
Uh-huh.
And an employees only?
You can
see
right
the boobies.
There for you.
Yeah, you can see the other ones that we can show. So,
nice.
So that, there's one more draw
if
for employees.
If I put those
only.
Up, my employees would probably sue me.
Yeah, exactly. And the big corporations will stop coming to dinner. Hey, Kate, it's been a lot of fun having you.
So great to talk to you guys.
Always
likewise,
great, Kate.
You going to come back again and speak to us again?
I would love that.
That's okay, great. Terrific. Kate Crater. The magazine is Food and Wine. You should pick it up. And the book they've just put out is Cocktails 2006. Over 150 of the best drinks and snacks from the hottest bars. We didn't even talk about the snacks, which I have recipes for in here. And it's an essential guide to American nightlife. And next year we better be in or she's in a lot of trouble. That's all I have to say. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 14:15. The time is 12 noon.